Hello, and welcome to TNT, the Technology and Things podcast. Your host, Paul Ferraro, is a former IT exec and currently a technology advisor. Jeff Krueger, a fellow technology enthusiast, is the co-host. They both spent many years working for a Fortune 500 company and are both passionate about leadership, technology, and the community.
Oh, no, now I just cursed on the TNT podcast.
Oh, no, Jeffrey. God damn it.
I was really... See, there you did it. I was really trying not to do that on this podcast. I felt like we were trying to raise the level of professionalism.
Well, you know, we do what we can do.
That's true.
Well, welcome to another live edition of TNT. It's exciting to be with you guys again.
Absolutely.
We have some exciting news. So the other day we did our
20th episode.
We did our 20th episode with Trey Layton, and that was a good episode. And had a lot of fun with Trey, and we had some stuff to raffle off, and so we actually have a winner announce. So we
get to hear the results.
We have a winner. So
that was a drum roll, in case you didn't
thank
know.
You. And his name is Kevin Fouts, and he is based in Arizona. And thank you for listening, Kevin, and thank you for...
Congratulate. He gets the laptop,
congrats.
Huh?
Yeah, he got the Dell laptop.
Oh, yeah. Dude, you're getting a Dell.
Dude, he got a Dell. That's pretty cool. So, and then we had lots of folks that are getting the Bluetooth headsets. I won't read off all the names.
So there's like 50 of them or something, right?
Yeah. Wow. So we had a really good reception on that.
Look at us giving things away. Yeah. Sponsored content. Like who would have imagined we'd get to this vaunted level of broadcasting?
This episode, we're not giving anything away. We don't have any more budget for any free giveaways.
We blew it all. All done in episode 20.
So the fun thing about today is...
The Jack and Diets. We've got those. That's fun.
Yeah.
Is that what's fun?
I don't know about Jack. I just have a Coke.
Oh, I see. See, I was thinking it's a no cursing, but it's okay for just a little Friday drinking, right? On the podcast. So tell us, remind me what's fun today, because I forgot. I made a joke and that's a thing.
Yeah, so what's fun today is we're going to have on... we're gonna have a returning guest on today. You missed that show.
I listened to it. I think I mastered that the audio.
That was the first time I had to run the board by myself. That was a bit of an experience. But you did the mastering on that one.
So that would be John.
John Carruthers.
Right? John Carruthers.
So he was with the FBI, and he's moved into the private sector, and so we're going to chat with him about that. And then we have Gary Hayslip, who is a author and CISO, and Macy Dennis also, who is a chief security officer for Evotech, and he's been a customer. He was on the client side for 20 something years, law enforcement and cleared defense contractors and all that kind of stuff. So I think we're going to have a pretty cool geeky security talk with these guys and dive into stuff. So it should be fun.
Awesome. Sounds great.
So they'll be coming in about, I don't know, 10 minutes or so. So we've got 10 minutes to kill, Jeffrey.
All right.
Thank you guys for coming on and doing this with Jeff and I. So this is Jeff Krueger.
Hey, dudes.
I'm Paul Ferraro. We've been doing this for about a little more than a year, although Jeff and I have been podcasting since before it was cool. Back in 2005.
Two cups and a string.
Before there was an iPhone. It was in the post-iPod, pre-iPhone era.
And we had literally hundreds of listeners. Anyways, it's really great to great to get you guys together. And so a couple things. You guys were just kind of getting into it, and I wanted to just pick your brain on a few things. One is like, what's the fun part of being in security? Because it seems like it's always just like a shit show. Is there anything fun about it? Please start it off. Gary, can you start us off? What's the fun part of being in security?
There's your answer.
This is taking a lot of thought.
See,
I'm kind of jaded. Yeah, I'm kind of jaded. You know, with all the
I love it
experience that I got. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I mean, you know, some of the fun things I think are, I mean, I love technology, and I'm fascinated by, you know, what people do with it, and you know what I consider fun is just, you know, the interesting ways people use it, or the way or how people hack things and what people do, mm-hmm. you know, with technology. I, you know, I find it, you know, pretty cool. And another fun part about it is just the community itself, the people that I work with, the people, you know, peers of mine, people that I hang out with. You know, in high school, you know, you were always the geek that, you know, and so you were never in the in crowd. And, you know, and of course I needed to wait, you know, 30 years later to actually be considered to be cool because the way, you know, the way technology and everything yeah. is.
You are?
Shut up. And, but no, I mean, I think, you know, for me, that's the fun part about it is just that being able to work with new technologies and the challenge and being able to go ahead and work and lead and mentor teams. I really like helping people grow and, you know, and see their passion and see the things that they discover and find out that they like, that they like the things that I'm, you know, into dealing with, you know, technology. And a lot of times I end up learning from them, you know, so I'm, and I think that's one of the things I like about the field too, is I'm constantly learning.
Yeah.
I mean, it isn't something that's boring. I mean, honestly, that's kind of one of the reasons why I left civil service was that, I kind of felt like, you know, for the next 20 plus years, I'd be stuck in the desk at the desk I was in, just doing the same thing for the next 20 years. And I just did not see that happening.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, you know, I need to do something different, you know. And it's been an interesting ride since I left. I mean, it's been almost 10 years ago, and it's just it's been a lot of fun.
No, it's cool. How about you, John?
Yeah, you know, I would parallel a lot of what Gary just said. I came from kind of the service sector as well. And I mean, I saw a lot of the same future. So I wanted to leave that and come into the private sector. And what I've enjoyed the most, I would say, is probably the fact that security requires so much innovation. And so therefore, what comes with that is the people that are working security are very innovative. Mm-hmm. And I like being around, you know, that type of person. And also, like Gary, I've developed a real thirst and a passion for leading people, right? And leadership and being able to lead innovative minds, to me, is the most exciting part of security, right?
Yeah.
It's just constantly changing. It requires that innovation. And I just love being a part of that that energy.
Well, those kind of folks will keep you on your toes. And
absolutely.
You usually yeah. don't go home thinking, wow, I'm pretty bored right now. That doesn't happen.
No. Yeah. Yeah, the challenge is turning your brain off, right? It's because you're always thinking about, like, what can I be doing to make this mousetrap bigger and better. So,
and we want to welcome you back too, John. John was gracious enough to do a podcast with us about a year ago. We even had like a official I forget like the title, your colleague
nice.
There. But we had our
public relations director,
yes.
I think it was.
We had a public relations person there. That was my first time having an interview with the public relations person there. It wasn't we'll review it later. She came.
Censoring my commentary live, I believe, is how it was working.
Special also, Agent Carruthers, please pause.
Yeah. He can't answer that question. Please move
right,
on.
Right, right. Yeah. Or also, we can go back and revise that, right? Right, Paul?
Given that I wasn't there, I do want to say we do have bottled water available, but however, because of the constraints of time and place, you're going to have to provide your own for
That's
this
right,
interview.
That's right, John.
So we learned that from your interview.
We learned a valuable lesson there. Make sure to bring water or something to drink
for the guests.
And we did that ever since that. We did do that.
Good. Yeah. My feedback was, what kind of an amateur operation is this? We don't have, all I'm asking for here is water.
Yeah, like even tap water would have been fine, guys.
It would have been fine.
We call it enhanced interviewing. The something like Gitmo.
Yeah. Macy, anything to add? What part do you find fun?
I mean, it's interesting because when I first came in from, I was in law enforcement and then the networking side, data center, and then I came over into security. And the first thing that drew me in was kind of the ever-changing landscape of, you know, how you could break things and actually figure out how to make them better and safer. Because when we were on the data center side, it was more of just, did it work? It's not down, right? You know, uptime. That was all we really cared about.
Mm-hmm.
And in law enforcement, it was more door kicking. It had nothing to do with, you know, I mean, shoot, a keyboard like this that just, you know, I didn't want to touch that. So, you know, it started out with the technology, kind of like what Gary was saying, that, you know, it's always changing. The fact that our adversaries, you know, literally, we're not even seeing like this much of what they really have. You're seeing C and D teams. You're not seeing the B or A teams.
Is that because the A or B teams are never caught, or why is that?
I would say they're not caught. If we're talking even just the tool sets and the malware, they don't use it because the crapware works. Why would they use anything that's valuable?
Yeah, their talents aren't necessary, right?
Mm.
Yeah, they keep them for the real stuff where they really need to go in and change something within a government.
Yeah.
And everybody does it. Both, you know, and I can say this, you know, both us and everybody else does this. It's not like, you know, it's a part of the what happens in the world. So.
Yeah, you got to choose when you use your secret weapon.
Yeah.
If you use it all the time, you reveal, first of all, that you have it.
Yeah. So yeah, and that's actually the biggest risk, because then you can't really use it again.
Right.
If it's that good.
Yeah.
That's always the fun part of talking to these guys is I feel like sometimes we go to a certain topic and I want to ask more, and then Macy gives me this look like, I'm not really going to tell you anything else anyway. So just kind of keep moving. So I'll just keep moving along. This past 2 months has felt like probably a year for many of us. I would think.
Conservative.
Is that conservative? Okay,
yeah,
good.
Exactly.
Okay. What is your...
That's because your kids are younger.
Yeah.
I haven't seen my kids. They just locked themselves in the room. What would you say, Gary, is like what with your role, what's changed? You know, has anything changed with your role or how you're looking at things in the last couple of months?
Well, see, I mean, I have to admit, I mean, you know, the working at SoftBank was kind of interesting before all this crap started, you know, but now, I think one of the things that is, you know, we were already 100% cloud.
Mm.
You know, so we're kind of one of those organizations where we don't own any data centers, you know, I don't own anything on-prem, you know, everything is basically cloud oriented. And yeah, I mean, so for us, when this whole thing was, I'm going to move my monitor's really bugging me.
No, go ahead.
When this whole thing with COVID started, you know, with us already being 100% cloud, I was already talking with my CIO and him and I were talking for about a week or two. And we were like, you know, I got a feeling we're going to end up sending people home. Yes, we got some type of quarantine coming. I mean, we were talking about this in February, right after RSA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just kind of felt, you know, there was a train coming down the tracks here on this. And the thing about this is, you know, being 100% cloud, it's just, you know, you just grab your laptop and your phone and you go on about your business, you know, as long as you got internet connectivity. And so we actually, I think it was like March 17th, we just told everybody in the company, you know, 757 employees, take everything, go home. You're working at home today. And then that evening, you know, we were pulling logs off of Slack and off of Zoom, and we pulled a whole bunch of numbers, and we took a look at them, and we're like, yeah, they were just as productive Yeah. And so the executive team said, all right, everybody stay put. And that was it. Everybody just stayed home. So now going on 8 weeks later, this sucks. But the infrastructure wise, everything we're doing is relatively the same. I mean, we're still in Zoom meetings. We're still in Slack. We're still got projects that are ongoing. We're still working with vendors. I'm still dealing with auditors. I mean, we're still doing same stuff. It's just that we're not face to face. What I do find interesting though is from a security perspective is, because I'm like tracking our numbers and stuff is, phishing has increased, and malware laced, attachments and stuff like that have increased. And stuff like that. Because they pretty much know your home, you're probably living on email. And so we're getting more of that. There's more of that kind of targeted stuff that we're seeing.
What we need is an executive order that since everyone's staying home, we should not have any phishing attempts during this time. Just clear that right up, right?
Yeah,
that
would work.
Do it by executive order.
That's a great idea, Jeff.
We do them every day now, so that should solve it, right? No more phishing.
Yeah. So it's kind of stuff like that. You can kind of. I can see from that, and I can see from the phishing that we're getting that people are doing research, that kind of stuff. It is what it is. I mean, it's just the nature of the beast, and working for a financial services company and you've got high profile people, you would expect that, and it's like, and then the types of attacks and stuff that you see are more orientated towards a remote workforce because that's what we are.
Yeah. You guys were pretty much already set up for that, sounds like. And so you just kind of rolled through it. But I've definitely seen some folks where, it's a complete change for their operation and they're struggling big time because they didn't have the VPN connectivity. They didn't have all the different things to do all their workforce. They had maybe 20% or 30%.
But, the thing about it is when you're fully in like this, even when you're fully in like this, you're going through your security stack and you're thinking to yourself and I'm talking with staff members and we're like, okay, gaps, what are we missing? And we're testing and we're looking at stuff. And I find that, from a policy perspective, we're having to adjust our policies now because because where you're working at's changed differently, so stuff like that, you're having to be a lot more flexible. We're having discussions about, when we're dealing with third party vendors and you're vetting them and everything and the questionnaires and stuff we're doing, hey, you can't go on site. You can't go travel and go talk to somebody. Right. You can't meet people face to face. It's all video conferencing stuff. And so there's a lot of those discussions too, and so it is a different adjustment.
How about you, John? What are you guys, what are you seeing?
From a company point of view, kind of like Gary, we are, very much cloud-based. So we haven't really missed a beat, as far as Illumina is concerned. At the team level, definitely I have found myself spending more time focused on tending and caring of my people, doing things like virtual happy hours, twice a week. We've got a lunchtime online game that the whole team will, call into and participate, checking on people. I do one-on-ones constantly, with my team now, just to make sure that they're okay. But that said, I had three of my team before the quarantine, they were already 100% working from home. So I kind of had a point of reference or a foundation that the rest of the team could lean on, when we first started the, let's go home and basically shutter our doors and work, I immediately had those three that were used to working from home kind of hold a series of sessions on, hey, this is how it's going to work. These are things that you should be aware of, on all video calls, try to show up 2 to 3 minutes early. If possible, show video, right? It's all of these things, schedule and calendar breaks during your day. I mean, that's been the biggest issue for me personally is, you know, I've already, I ordered a stand-up desk. I've got a butt cushion. I've got all these things that I didn't have 2 months ago. And well, I just try to replicate.
That's true about the breaks and stuff, because I kind of roll into my office usually a little before 8, which is, just takes me 3 minutes to get over to the office, right?
Different commute.
That's a long walk.
I used to listen to podcasts and different things.
Yeah.
You know, now now those are like, I don't really listen to those because my commute's 3 minutes.
Right.
And then like hours and hours go by and it's like, oh crap, I haven't even gotten out of this chair, right? You know, which is kind of, so having people that
not,
are kind of
not healthy.
No.
No, not healthy at all.
So I'm trying to walk the dog and do things like that.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, my comment, though, has been consistently, we haven't missed a beat for the betterment of the company and for the detriment of the employee.
Yeah.
Right.
That's good.
You know, and so you just care and feeding of the team is so important, and making sure they take their time off and take their breaks. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I took a day off actually a couple of weeks ago, and it was kind of like, it was kind of even weird asking for a day off. Because it was kind of like, what are you going to do? Right. You know, no one asked me that, but I was just thinking that in my mind, like, what are you going to do on this day off of yours? And it was just like, not go on a Zoom.
Exactly.
Not do a Zoom. So, it's crazy. Jeffrey, you feel free if you know, jump in.
Okay. I love when Jeffrey comes up
with good stuff.
Yeah. This one's definitely off the wall. Okay. So in the animal world, I'm going to tell you about two insects. You've got the mosquito and the bumblebee, both of which are a pain in humans' ass because they cause us grief, right? They bite us, they sting us. Yep, I mean, we don't really love them. However, the bumblebee provides a valuable resource. They're pollinating things. Like, we all realize, like, we need bees, and when we use pesticides to kill bees, it's actually a problem. Mosquitoes, on the other hand, biologists have found no purpose for them in the world. They're actually, they did find one purpose. They said that, like, in the Amazon, you know, mosquitoes prevent humans from actually bulldozing it and building strip malls and stuff like that. I mean, not like that's what you would do in the middle of the Amazon, but essentially it controls development in some remote areas. But otherwise, you don't need them in the food chain. They're not, you could eliminate the mosquito from the world and it wouldn't be a problem. Okay. So now my question for you guys as security teams, what do you think about black hat hackers? Are they more like mosquitoes or they are more like bumblebees? Do they serve a purpose? And I'm not talking about the, you know, black hats you hired to pen test or whatever. I'm talking about the ones that steal your data.
Straight up bad.
Yeah. Yeah, the bad guys.
Nation state actors, criminals, you name it.
You name Activists. It. Although it's my belief that probably the nation states are using the things developed by the individuals, but, you know, whatever. I mean, however you want to look at it, just my concept is, you got a baddie, and do they serve a purpose in the greater scheme of things, particularly in IT security, or are they just a nuisance that, you know, we want to eliminate?
Oh, I still want this one.
Go for it, Macy. Jump in.
All right. So I'll classify it and I'll hit it across all of them, meaning the three different types of, we'll call it baddies or bad guys. So you look at the hacktivist, even if they're a thorn in someone's side, they're there to drive a point or at least keep awareness of things that are going on. They may knock down someone's website or, you know, change it and do some different things. But I think that's a healthy, the world's never going to be a completely peaceful place. And people have rights to voice their opinion. Sometimes they take it too far. Sometimes they do certain things. But I mean, selfishly, three of us are always going to have jobs. I mean, I have no fear on that because of it.
Yeah.
You look at the nation states, they're, you know, whether it's, you know, and I keep throwing this out, but whether it's us or somebody else, it's a way to make sure that you have that edge to protect your country, the technology, no matter whatever it is. The criminals, honestly, I'd rather someone goes in and drops ransomware or, you know, extorts money virtually versus, you know, what John's, you know, previous career you know, FBI, their biggest thing was going to stop bank robberies. Well, I don't want someone sticking a gun in someone's face. I'd rather them be sitting behind a keyboard. So when you look at it that way, are they a pain in our ass? Yeah. But you know what? They give a damn fun job. And honestly, and when you look at it in some ways, maybe it's a little safer. Maybe it's not. Maybe it could be worse. I think it's every time they break something, it expands everyone's knowledge of either how to build something better or, hey, that was weak. So when you look at it from that aspect, I don't think it's always a bad thing. Do I want them digging into all my stuff? No. But it's also kind of fun when they do.
Well, no one likes to get stung by a bee. Well, I've yet to find even the beekeepers don't like that.
Well, I mean, to me, I don't really look at them as being a bee. I kind of look at them as being a mosquito. But I don't think mosquitoes are useless.
Ah, okay.
Mosquitoes are part of the food chain. You have birds that eat mosquitoes. You have lizards that eat mosquitoes. And there's a lot of smaller animals that eat mosquitoes. Yeah, so they are part of the food chain. Yeah, and I look at it when you look at cyber as a life cycle, they do drive innovation, even though damage things, you know. And there are different types, you know, of, and I don't say hackers, I say cyber criminals. There are different types of cyber criminals and people that fall within these different categories. And these things, they do drive innovation. They do drive change, whether it's political or whether it's digital or whether it's within a company. And, you know, I also, you know, in some ways I look at it as a necessary evil. And in some ways I look at it as, you know, I wish they had some type of a code of ethics, as in don't attack.
I do agree.
That you would actually kill somebody. You know, we understand that, you know, hey, you're in a third world country, you're highly educated, there's no jobs for you. And you're going to go ahead and use whatever talent, whatever aspect you've got to try to go ahead and feed your family. Got that. You still don't need to go ahead and attack a hospital.
Well, yeah, that's what I was just going to say. So immediately when this all happened, there were ransomware attacks on hospitals that were trying to help people.
Yeah. Because with COVID-19?
The criminals knew that they had them because I just crypto locked all your stuff. You can't even figure out what the tests are. You know, what the results are or what this is. I mean, that is, I agree, that is just absolutely wrong.
So, you know, so to me, I kind of look at it as, you know, they're basically part of the food chain, you know, and they do damage. Yes, we do learn from them. Do I think that we're ever going to get rid of, you know, them? No. I think, you know, we're actually in a Cold War where they get better, we get better, they get better, we get better. It's kind of a thing going back and forth. You know, which means that, like as Macy said, you know, we've got job security for a while. Our jobs may change, and I'm actually writing an article right now about how COVID is probably going to change the CISO role. But it's like, you know, it's still, you're still going to have something along those lines here because of, you know, the cyber criminals and the other groups like that that use, you know, the digital means to go ahead and, whether it's retribution or whether it's making money or whether it's just being assholes and they want to damage things.
Yeah. I got a question after John answers because I want to hear his answer, but I've got one for my two peers out there.
Yeah, I, you know, speaking personally, you know, those mosquitoes, Jeff, have provided me job security for the last, 28, 29 years.
Wow, you are.
So, selfishly, there is a value to me of those black hats, but it does sound like, Macy, you were describing, you kind of look at the black hat as one big penetration test, right? And so, there's definitely value in what they provide, I guess, if you want to call that a provision, but you have to be able to analyze and accept, or basically review, analyze and action, you know, their activity and their behavior. And if you're not positioned, and to Gary's point, the code of ethics, I think, as we talked about right now, is the perfect example of that. And Macy, you talked about the hospitals. There is plenty of low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you. I mean,
ridiculous amount.
Yeah. I mean, the whole world is a barrel that they can fish in. They can certainly not, you know, they can catch and release the hospitals and who and anything involved with COVID. But that's a tough one, Jeff. You know, I was trying to come up with some dragonfly analogy. Does anybody eat dragonflies?
Gary? I do not.
You know?
Things do eat dragonflies. Dragonflies are required.
I would think birds eat birds.
Mosquitoes
probably
are eaten. Yeah. However, they've been determined to not be required to be eaten. Like, if mosquitoes disappeared, the birds would eat other small insects. Yes. They're not necessary. Yeah. And look, even bees. I just paid like $400 to have some bees removed from the corner of my house. And I love bees, but we have to protect ourselves from them, right? You can't have a hive growing around people, because they could get stung, and you have to, you know, if you're a beekeeper, you have to wear a suit. Like, it's one of those things. They serve a valuable purpose, but you have to treat them with caution, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Kid gloves.
Absolutely. And you know, the exterminator told me too, is he said, you know, the bees got in through a crack in my exterior of my home. And I said, well, can I just put some spray foam in there? And he said, no, because they'll chew through it. He's like, you need to put steel wool and spray foam in the hole. And
wow.
I was like, bees chew through steel wool? When did that happen? Like,
or through spray foam?
Or spray foam.
Wow.
They chew through the foam. And they were like, yeah, like, we think that they can probably chew through the steel wool too, but it's like not worth their time.
Wow.
Like, when did that start happening?
Yeah,
that's crazy.
It's like it came from the desert, bumblebees or something.
Macy, if you have a question, go ahead.
You were going to follow up on my underwhelming answer.
No. you were good. I've been on a lot of different Slack channels, with my CISO peers, and I'm seeing a lot of, openings pop up for organizations. I'm seeing a lot of CISOs shifting, big companies, little companies. I'm seeing senior directors moving up to VPs. You would think with all of this, everybody would just be like, I'm staying put. Nope. I am seeing so much movement. It's unbelievable. I've got a question for Gary and John. How do you see the CISO role changing? And do you see that maybe, and this movement, let me clarify, started a little bit before COVID. So I started seeing it. So I'm wondering if this is going to be if it's just everybody getting itchy and it's that time. I mean, I used to be every 4 years, but how do you see the role changing? And do you think that this is more of a, companies are seeing more of a need, and that's why the movement, if that makes sense, because there's not a ton of us. Yeah. There really aren't.
Oh, right.
Honestly, I think, from what I've been seeing is a lot of companies now realize their infrastructure and their business plans and everything had in a COVID world is wanting, and they need to fix it.
Yeah.
And so in the process of fixing, infrastructure and embracing cloud and more of the virtual, remote type business operations, they realize, oh crap, I'm actually going to need somebody to manage security and look at risk. And, it can't be the guy in IT that I've been screaming at for the last 3 years. I actually need somebody that knows what they're doing, that's trained in it, that's got experience in it. And so I think companies are, some companies are beginning to hire their first role, their first position. And it's probably a security director or a security manager if they're smaller, or a senior director or a VP, a CISO level if they're larger. And then I'm also seeing some of the, where security may have been part of IT and it was just, a junior manager that was doing it. And now all of a sudden, hey, we're going to break it out some and mature it. And the position is going to be elevated and they want to bring somebody in, that's going to grow that team because they've realized, okay, we've kind of had it. We've kind of underfunded it. But now if we're going to go ahead and live in COVID and be able to do this remote stuff and be able to save costs and not have to have all these offices and all these buildings and all this other kind of stuff, we need to have a more senior level person in security that can look across the whole enterprise and let's put together a strategic plan that's going to take care of us for the next 36 to 48 months as we start growing in that new direction. And so we're starting to see some of that, you know. And then, you know, and then of course you've got a lot of your regular movement too. You've got companies that are downsizing. You know, they grew up really, really big. You know, COVID, you know, Black Swan come along and smacked everybody and realized, you know, hey, your business plan isn't as good as you thought it was, you know. And now all of a sudden, you know, funds are being retrenched. Companies are taking a step back. They realize, you know, hey, we kind of grew a little too big and we can't operate in this type of environment. So let's do a 10 to 20% layoff. Let's get rid of, you know, certain offices, certain buildings, things that we don't need anymore because we're working remote. And hey, let's, you know, build out security to kind of manage this new infrastructure, and let's get lean and mean so that, you know, 6 to 12 months when we bust out the gate, we've got a CISO that's already ready to roll with us when we expand and blow out again. So, I mean, I see companies retrenching and just trying to save costs. And then I see companies repositioning themselves to kick some serious ass when it's 6 to 12 months when they think they're going to be able to break out. So it's kind of interesting watching the moves.
Yeah.
John, how about you?
Yeah. I mean, a couple thoughts. You know, it's almost cliche now to say that, that we're trending towards, you know, the CISO having equal reporting as the CIO. We've been saying that for quite a while. And I think the fact that we have been saying that is indicative of kind of that change, Macy. You know, Gary talked about, you know, kind of streamlining and figuring out what do we need from a security point of view. When I say we, I'm talking about the company. And it makes me nervous right now. My company, Illumina, we have a void in both our CIO and our CISO positions. And, you know, I got brought in as director with reporting, you know, solid line reporting to the CISO. Well, now I'm kind of having to run that as the director. So I'm kind of running our cybersecurity program, reporting to an interim CIO who has not a whole lot of knowledge on IT or security. And he fully admits that. But it makes me nervous because I almost don't want to do too good of a job.
Yeah.
You know, I want them to fill the role because I want to get back to what I was hired to do.
What you were brought in for, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so I don't think that's going to be an issue, but still, it's certainly, Gary has now put a thought in my mind that.
John, that's
very comfortable.
That's funny about what you said about what I was hired to do. Because when Jeff and I were at Qualcomm, inevitably, I would say 90% of the time you hire someone and maybe 3 or 4 months later, they're not doing anything like what they were hired to do. And so you just says like, I'm like people are trying to get back. This job that I had or that I was hired for, I'd love to do that. And it's like, next thing you know, you've got twice as much responsibility and you're doing all these other things, and it's usually good, but it's kind of funny because it's amazing how fast sometimes that happens. And I thought of you when I saw those moves at your company. I was like, wow, you just started
and that's
there.
That's been a learning curve. Yeah. That's been a learning curve for me, Paul, because I came from an environment where, you know, it was relatively static. You know, in the FBI, if you had a role, that's the role you did. There was not a lot of variance. And so that's been one of many differences or challenges that I've encountered when I've moved over to the private sector is exactly what you're talking about. Like this expansive, diverse role that
could just, you know, change on a dime. Yeah.
Many, that was never discussed during the interview process.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
So one thing I'm seeing with, some of the different CISOs and executives that I either coach or advise is they're also going from doing board meetings, you know, which it might have been once a quarter. And some of these security executives, you know, they might have been walking in with the CIO, you know, kind of like just tagging along and giving their 2 minutes and then let the CIO run with the rest. Or, you know, they had time to prep and everything else. The one thing, and I'm getting calls, you know, 10 o'clock at night, hey, I got to talk tomorrow and I want to run this by you, you know, just kind of like a sounding board. it's unbelievable just the fact, because it's like twice a week now, constantly. So I'm also seeing where the education or business acumen that may not have been there before on some of these security executives is just starting to go, you know, boom, 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 which is great for the industry. What are you guys seeing? Are your boards meeting that quickly? You know, or is it just the ELTs that are driving it?
Well, I mean, I can tell you the, for me, it was traditionally, you know, at SoftBank, I would go ahead and I'd put stuff together, hand it over to my CIO, and he would brief it, you know, at our executive board. And just recently, they're now talking about me doing the briefings on a quarterly basis, you know, for stuff that we're working on. There's also discussions about me briefing the managing partners, dealing with social media threats, social engineering threats, stuff like that, giving them, you know, briefings at least, you know, twice a year, you know, possibly bringing the FBI in to do a briefing just so that they're aware, you know, and so they're becoming more comfortable with security over this last year as I've built out the security program and the team. And so it's, you know, it's becoming kind of accepted, you know, now that they know who you are and they trust you, you're, you know, being asked to go ahead and do that.
You know, Gary, something I learned from the great John Carruthers is that you should always befriend an FBI agent before you actually need one, you know. And so what was that called, John, again?
We called it, or I called it Project BAFA.
BAFA, Paul. Yes.
Yep. Befriend an FBI agent, exactly. So you need to be out there BAFA.
I like it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, Macy, to your question about, you know, the board and you know, discussing these matters, at Illumina, obviously we have the quarterly meetings, but in addition, and you're probably seeing this a lot, I would imagine, you know, big companies are probably going to have a subgroup of the board, right? Like we have an information security working group, and our CISO would brief that group on a pretty regular cadence. And they would be comprised of, you know, board members that could actually consume, you know, some of the security information.
Understanding of it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, right. And so it was more of a two-way conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's certainly happening at Illumina, and I would imagine that that's probably becoming more prevalent.
Yeah, I'm seeing that,
you know, out there.
Is that working group is so that you can have more of an informal conversation where it's like you can kind of, here's what's going on. They can ask questions. It's not just like the, you know, big formal kind of board meeting where.
Exactly. We're talking a very targeted discussion. Yeah. For example, a couple of weeks ago, we had one that was focused on COVID-19. In addition to, you know, what security concerns do we now have in this work from home environment?
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, so those are, you know, they kind of come together. But they're two different issues, two different talking points, but they're both related to one another.
Yeah.
I think across industry, we're all dealing with that.
Hey, Macy, for maybe a question for you, since you're doing a lot of, you know, you talk to a lot of different clients and potential clients and stuff like that. What's sort of the major takeaway for, you know, the last month or so? What are you kind of taking away from this event? We'll call it an event.
Yeah, no, that's good. So I think the one thing is people really haven't realized how ready they were for something like this. I've been there, you know, you have your incident response, your business continuity planning, all these different things, you know, I've got more than, you know, the ability, you know, typical, even in the infrastructure side, when you're purchasing your VPN and all your remote connectivity, usually buy on an average 30%, because, you know, easily 70% should be in your offices. And that was just kind of the old swag. And there have been companies where I'm like, holy, like smaller, where they had all their stuff together. They didn't even miss a beat. To Gary's point, it was like, okay, well, you have a desktop, grab your monitor, grab your power cord, grab your desktop, go. They had endpoint protection. They had all their, you know, single sign-on set up, their VPN. I didn't miss a beat. And I'm talking down to companies where, you know, I've got one that in middle of the country where their job literally is just to rent out heavy equipment and tools and things like that, but not like to like you and I, but more like contractors and things like that. They didn't even miss a beat. And I asked them and they're like, oh yeah, we're 100% cloud. You know, we have our stores and some of those things, but all our stuff didn't miss a beat. Then there's very large companies where they're like scrambling and it's like, oh, well, we had hardware, but now I can't scale that quick because hardware can't show up. I can't get it into my data center. I can't get an engineer in there, you know? So they're asking for, okay, what's my SaaS solution now? What can I do?
But
it just been surprising where almost the little guy had their shit together and the bigger, you know, companies and teams were kind of the ones that were kind of scrambling.
Well, I feel like, too, you know, the companies where some of those bigger companies, they've got very specialized equipment that they're using.
Yep.
They've got, you know, high speed storage and infrastructure that, just doesn't work from home.
Can't handle.
Know, you can't do VLSI, you know, CAD from home, you know.
Oh, no.
Right. So I feel for all of those kind of guys because I'm sure those companies must have said, hey, they're essential workers and made them go to work anyways. Right. But,
yeah.
I think that's going to be an interesting thing to see how does all that sort of evolve over the next few years, you know, because I think there'll be a focus on that. How do we get these people to be able to work from home? You know, do we have workstations or things we can give them to use from home and enable the networks better, you know, but there's all the data sharing issues and things like that. Right. But, you know,
some of it's been like, if it's technology that makes sense or engineering work.
Yeah.
There's been others where, you know, pharmaceutical companies where they were focused on, you know, building out this drug or this, you know, anti whatever for this disease. And all of a sudden they're shifting to focus on COVID. They need to be in the labs.
Yeah.
Those systems have to work.
Yeah.
That's the definition of essential.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not yeah. work from home. It's your home just changed.
Right. Yeah.
But it's funny you say that though, Mace. You know, talking about the fact that we were so ready. I think generally speaking, you know, as a society, we've been ready for this because it's 2020. Yes. Everybody's got internet connectivity. Everybody's got routers and, you know, wireless in their homes. Imagine if this had happened in like 1998.
Yeah.
Oh, it'd be complete shutdown. And depression.
You know, you think it's bad now. Like, yeah, I mean, it's.
Honestly, I think, you know, those people that need like the high end machines, the company will just ship them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we had, you know, for us, a lot of the stuff that we were running into was like, you know, we had employees who had their 15-inch laptop, you know, when they get home, you know, these are managing partners and people that are doing different stuff, and they need big monitors.
Yeah.
So we just shipped them monitors. You know, we had a thing where we were concerned. We knew, all right, 8 weeks in, and we probably got another couple more months at least, you know, people sitting at the desk, you know, we have like a wellness benefit. And so we just told people, yeah, hey, you can use your wellness benefit to buy standing desks. So that's what I have, John. I freaking love my standing desk.
Oh, isn't it great?
I'm
just up and down constantly all day long.
And so it's just stuff like that. I mean, I honestly think, you know, companies adjust. You know, when I worked at WebRoot before I come to SoftBank, you know, we used to just, it was kind of a standard for us. We would hire talent where it was at. I mean, one of our best malware engineers, and he's probably one of maybe five people on the planet that, you know, custom designed malware that they would use to test their code and stuff. This guy lived in Kentucky, in the backwoods in Kentucky, but he had a very good internet connection and we shipped him all of his machines.
You know, Gary, I think one of the biggest takeaways from this whole deal is you can hire people from Kentucky and you're okay with it. You know, like too many people were still stuck on that though of like, yep, you got to move to San Diego. I mean, this is just, you know,
And you're like, I think he did like once a quarter. I think once a quarter he'd fly.
Yeah,
out
most people are willing to do that. Yeah.
And the rest. I had a conversation with HR earlier today, and I was saying the exact same thing. The candidate pool just got so much deeper.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. As a result. San Diego, it's relatively shallow. But Jeff, I mean, now it's
hard to get people to move to San Diego. I mean, people go, oh, I'd love to live there, but it's not easy to get someone to move, especially when they have families and all that. And I know Jeff and I used to have, you know, we'd find these great people, and it's like, oh, they're in Ohio, and it's like, oh, sorry, they don't want to move. Boom, they're out. But now it's like, who gives a shit? Actually, it's nice that they're in Ohio, you know?
It's like wearing face masks, right? When there's only one person wearing a face mask, they're the odd man out. Weird. But when everyone's wearing them, it's fine. And I think that's the same thing. Yeah. If you're meeting on Zoom and everyone's on Zoom, then it really, if everyone's working from home, it doesn't matter. The problem was that we had a small percentage, like 5% of our people working from home. And so, you know, things would happen, like you go get into a meeting conference room and no one wants to set up the video conference in the conference room just for the one guy that's up in San Jose, you know, but if everyone's on it,
he can just dial in,
then it's fine. Then it's fine. We would all do it, you know, but like that made it. I mean, honestly, it wasn't just our managers. I think I had hesitancy sometimes because I just knew that people wouldn't do what we're all doing now, you know, if they didn't have to. Now they have to. So.
Yeah, I think you get that equal time, too.
Yeah,
you
know, that pack mentality.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens when we move back to having conference rooms, because then you'll have three or four people in the conference room, and if there's three or four people that aren't, now you do have to make a decision if you're going to set up the Zoom or not. You know, and that's what happened to us a lot, is we didn't set up a video conference unless everyone was working remotely. Yeah. And when you get three or four people in the room, you know, so I wonder when you're going to get to the point where you go like, I want to just dial into, we'll just dial in the conference phone. We won't actually turn on the video conference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if after this, people are more open to like, we're just going to do a video conference every time. I think that'll make it a lot more seamless.
I like that, Jeff. That's a good point, really. Because I had a guy in Huntsville, Alabama, when I was at my defense contractor, Rockstar. And the amount of times you just, to your point, sometimes it was just forgetting, everybody's here.
Yeah.
And you'd start the meeting and then you'd get a text, has the meeting started yet? And it's like,
sorry.
I'll tell you, the other thing is just, if I was in a meeting with someone that was a director level or above, they didn't start the conference phone. Even if it was just dialing into a conference phone, they don't do that. Somebody else has to do it, you know? And like, I think that happened too with video conferencing. It's like, you know, if a VP was in a meeting, we weren't starting up a video conference unless there was an underling there to turn it on for them. But now everybody's home. The VPs have to start their own video conference. They don't have an underling in their house to come set it up for them. And, everyone's capable of doing this. You know, like no one was incapable of it. It was just sort of like hey, pseudo, bring me my coffee. You know, like you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, and it's like we've invested in Zoom rooms. So each of our offices.
Us too.
You know, have like, you know, each of our offices have, you know, these conference rooms, and they're actually Zoom rooms, and you just book the room. And then when you come in and you got the iPad and everything sitting on the table, you just select it and boom, you're immediately into a Zoom and everybody just joins. And so to us, that's the reason why, like when we told everybody to disperse and take off and go home, and you know, we're all under house arrest, go home. to us, it was like, okay. Now all of a sudden, instead of having, you know, 100 Zoom rooms, we got 750.
So, hey guys, I really appreciate you guys jumping on today and talking with Jeff and I and sharing a little bit about what's going on and really do appreciate it.
No problem.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. And really appreciate it.
Yep. We'll talk to you guys soon. Stay safe out there and look forward to talking to you again. Yep.
Right. I'm gonna go get some tap water.
All right.
All right, John.
See you later, guys.
Very good.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Jeffrey. That was fun.
Yes, very fun. Excellent.
Know what they're doing.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thank you, Macy. Yeah, I could talk to those guys all day.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if we were or not.
I just, you know, I thought we'd let we used to, we took our time for an hour, so I figured let them.
No, it was good. I'm glad that they got excited about my bee versus mosquito question.
I knew. I just had a feeling that you had something, and you came out with a great question there.
They're not always good though. Sometimes my off the wall questions are just they're too far off the wall. I mean, I think the whole conversation about Richard Stallman was like we just went down. Yeah. I'm glad you started the video conference that night.
The Richard Stallman thing was a little weird, but that's
yeah.
okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But yeah. So thanks for listening, everybody, and. We'll see you next time, and have a great weekend.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you.